Welcome back to HealthLink On Air, produced each week by SUNY Upstate Medical University, making the academic difference in healthcare in the Central New York community. And this is your host, Tricia Torrey, every patient's advocate. Well, vaccines, they've been in the news frequently in the past year, whether we're talking about HPV for girls or the flu vaccine or even controversy surrounding autism and vaccines. It's an important topic, and parents and grandparents of babies in particular know it's one of the most important conversations they can have with their pediatrician. So we're going to a man who can help us clarify some of the questions. Dr. Joseph Domokowski, professor of pediatrics at University Hospitals, here in the studio with me this morning. Good morning, Dr. Domokowski.
Good morning. Thanks for inviting me back.
Well, thank you so much for coming back, because this really is one of those topics that, boy, everybody seems to have an opinion about. But there are really only a couple of good answers, aren't there?
There are, yep.
All right. First of all, let's talk about the basics. What are vaccines? What are vaccinations? What are they for?
Yeah, so immunizations, vaccines, are designed to protect children, adolescents, and even adults against infectious diseases that are pretty common. So we vaccinate and we don't get the infection. That's the whole point.
And when we get that vaccination, usually, if I understand, but not always, what we're getting is a very small piece of whatever that infectious disease is.
Yeah, the vaccine components really have improved over the last 10, 20 years. And so we're able to use much more specific, what we call antigens in our vaccines, to really refine the immune response to that specific component that we need to have immunity to.
And if we go back to high school biology, what we learned was if we get a little piece of that disease, then our body builds antibodies against the disease.
Right, exposed to a piece of that bacteria or a piece of that virus. Exactly, that's correct.
Now, one of the things that's always been interesting to me, and I go back to the days, as will many of our listeners, to when we were standing in line at school to get that sugar cube with the polio vaccine in it. So now I've dated myself. But what I remember hearing even then was the idea wasn't just to protect me, but it was to eradicate the disease as well. Are there vaccines that we got as children that have been eradicated, or those diseases have been eradicated?
There's only a single infection that we've eradicated worldwide, and that's smallpox. That's why we don't give smallpox vaccine routinely anymore. The disease is gone. It has not been reported for many decades.
Wow.
In our hemisphere, polio, natural polio infection, is eliminated, but globally, there are still cases of polio in places where there's international conflict, the Middle East, Afghanistan, parts of Africa. So we know our world's gotten smaller. If you travel to those areas, or if someone travels to those areas, they could bring back polio if they're not protected.
They could bring it back, or even you could travel someplace where somebody who'd been there also traveled to the same place.
Exactly.
And pick up that disease. So these vaccinations are important. You don't think that your child's necessarily ever going to go to the Middle East, but you don't know, and you don't know who they're going to be exposed to.
That's right. And another important point is that folks that are choosing not to vaccinate their kids are placing their children and the rest of us at risk, because right now we have an ongoing problem with mumps infection in the United States, an ongoing problem with measles infection in the United States.
Whoa.
These are vaccine-preventable diseases.
And that's really one of the controversies. So let's go ahead and address it and get it out on the table. There are parents who are choosing not to vaccinate their children. Why?
Well, I think you have to ask them and find out exactly the reason why. And if there is a good, educated reason why that they can explain, we can further educate them to explain why it's always a better decision to vaccinate than not to vaccinate.
Well, let's talk about some of those things they would say. For instance, I know that there's been a question mark, and we're going to address this a little more thoroughly in a minute, but there's been a question mark about whether vaccinations cause autism. Is that one of those things that you might say they've educated themselves?
I think so. And, you know, celebrities like Jenny McCarthy write an entire book basically accusing vaccines of causing her son's autism. But if you go back and look at where that idea came from 10 years ago, that scientific idea was tested and disproven, not just once, but over and over and over again.
Right.
But that notion, that concept, still exists as an emotional issue for many families, especially families with autistic kids.
It does. And it's a fear factor, isn't it? Do you find that parents who have children with autism are reluctant to vaccinate younger children?
Actually, no. Most of them are kind of upset by the smaller group of folks that continue to believe that vaccines contributed to their children's autism.
Really?
Most parents of autistic children are in full support of our routine immunization
they
program.
They are.
Absolutely.
Let's talk then, would there be other reasons? You say that they've educated themselves. Are there other reasons they might come to you? Are there side effects, for instance, that they're worried about beyond the idea of autism?
Well, we know that when we inject vaccines, we expect to have local injection site reactions.
Mm-hmm.
And in some cases...
And when you say that, you mean right where you've injected it, right on the skin?
Yeah, redness, yeah. Swelling,
okay.
Tenderness for a couple of days.
Okay.
And some infants do develop fevers in response to vaccines. Those are fevers are easily controlled generally.
But the body develops a fever on purpose. It develops it to get rid of whatever the problem is, right?
Well, this is the response to the vaccine. It's
sure.
The response that's needed so that if you are exposed to the real deal
mm-hmm.
later on, you will be protected.
Right. So actually the fever, even though short term it's kind of bad news, in the long term it's actually good news. You know that it's actually taken hold and the body will build those antibodies.
Right, that the immune system is responding to that vaccine.
Interesting. Interesting. What vaccines are children getting that might even be new? I mean, you go back to the smallpox. I have that mark on my arm where we got the smallpox vaccine. What are some of the ones that are new? I remember, for instance, MMR. That's measles, mumps, and rubella, if I remember correctly.
That's right. That's tried and true. That's
yep.
one of the older ones.
It's been around for a long time now. And what are some of the ones that babies would be getting now that maybe they weren't getting 10 or 20 years ago?
Yeah, so the newest one introduced to our routine immunization schedule is a rotavirus vaccine.
Ah.
It's an oral vaccine similar to the oral polio vaccine that you mentioned
okay.
earlier.
So you just squirt it in the baby's mouth?
Squirt it in the baby's mouth. 2 doses or 3 doses depending on the brand that you're using.
Mm-hmm.
This vaccine prevents the most common cause of infant diarrheal illness.
Ah, so that would be a good one for babies to have too. Speak to me now about the flu vaccine, because there's also been some changes in the flu vaccine, which that's just, you get that every year, right? And I know that children now are supposed to get it, but there are even bigger parameters than that.
Yeah, I think the paradigm for influenza protection as a nation really has shifted toward vaccinating our young children and our teenagers. The current recommendation is to immunize all children between the ages of 6 months through their 18th year,
mm-hmm.
so up until 19 years of age,
mm-hmm.
every single one of them every flu season. We know that they are the most likely to spread influenza to the frail elderly folks and the people that are immunocompromised in our communities.
Mm-hmm.
We also know that because they're young and they're healthy, their immune systems have a much better response to the vaccine than the ones that are compromised.
Ah, interesting. Well, I did find that was different. And actually, Dr. Gilroy will be here in another week or two. She's going to talk about how the flu shot is developed each year. But I know that it's fascinating. This has been a huge shift in the approach to the flu vaccine. The idea that, yes, you can immunize the elderly because they're at risk of contracting the flu, but they're around the babies and they're around the young children and the teenagers. And some of these kids can pick up the flu and they might not even have the symptoms. You wouldn't even know that they could pass it on to somebody else.
Or you think about school-age children, when they get the flu, they may just get a little bit of a fever and not much else. They're still feeling well enough to go to school or going to the mall. So
or they're just cranky.
Yeah, they're exposing everybody.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So the best way to prevent flu in grandma and grandpa is, immunize them.
Mm-hmm.
But remember that they're less likely to respond well to the vaccine than their
grandchildren.
Grandma
and grandpa are, yes.
And if you vaccinate their grandchildren, when they come and visit during the holiday time or during the winter time, potentially incubating flu, if those kids don't get the flu, they're not going to spread it to their grandparents.
They can't spread it on to them. Now, you said 6 months. Now, I have a new little granddaughter, and she's only a month old now. She wouldn't get the shot, but her brothers should have the shot.
Right, so our current vaccine strategy starts at 6 months of age.
Mm-hmm.
The safety and efficacy of flu vaccines have not been well tested in infants younger than 6 months.
Okay.
So the idea is to, again, cocoon protect those newborns for the first 6 months of life.
I like that, cocoon.
By vaccinating their household, everyone in their house,
mm-hmm.
so that the baby doesn't get sick. The very young and the very old are the ones that are most likely to have complications from the flu.
Very interesting. Now, we have just about a minute and a half, but let's talk very briefly about the whole thing about the autism and vaccines, because I do think this is interesting. And you alluded to the fact now that there have been many tests that have shown that autism was not caused by vaccines. It was an ingredient that used to be in them, right?
Well, it depends what you're reading about, because MMR vaccine was accused of contributing to autism. MMR vaccine has never contained the thimerosal, the mercury-containing preservative. Mm-hmm. That preservative has been removed from other vaccines since 2001. Mm-hmm. And in the last 8 years, 7.5 years, the rates of reported autism continue to climb. And since autism is most commonly diagnosed by the second birthday, we know that that association really never existed.
It didn't exist. So it must be something else and not the vaccinations.
Absolutely.
And so if parents are trying to use the potential of autism as an excuse not to vaccinate their children, they're just way off base.
They need to get better informed, and I recommend that they read Paul Offit's book. It's called Autism's False Prophets, and he really goes through the science very well for a layperson to understand it completely.
Very good. Well, you know, we'll put a link to that book from our HealthLink On Air website. Very good. Well, is there anything else we should know about children and vaccinations?
Immunizations are the safest and most effective thing that we do in medicine, and to have something that safe and that effective and not use it, I think, is an unethical approach.
Well said, and very definite. Well, Dr. Joseph Domokowski, thank you so much for your time this morning.
My pleasure.
I think this has been very helpful. And listeners, we need to take a break. We'll be back in just a few moments. This is SUNY Upstate's HealthLink On Air on 570 WSYR.